everyone, and welcome to the Screen Strong Families Podcast, bringing you the best solutions for parents who are serious about finally eliminating screen problems in their home. This is Melanie Hempe, and if you are one of our regular listeners, welcome back. And if you are a new friend, we're so glad you found us. You are no longer in the dark. You have found your people and the answers to your screen questions that may just change your life. So today is an incredible show and a really unbelievable opportunity for you to learn something that really could save your kid's life. Before we get started, I just wanted to talk to you a minute about the topic, because we're going to be talking about sex trafficking today and some kind of tough issues. And I don't want you to click off and roll your eyes and say, oh, no, I can't handle any more bad news today. I really, really want to talk to you about something that I was just so guilty of in my early days of figuring out how to manage all these screen things with my kid, and with my oldest. And I want to just start off by saying and asking you a question. Have you ever been shocked over something that your child did or you found out they were doing? Just think about it. I mean, really shocked. Somebody told me once that even if you are shocked, you should never let a teenager know you're shocked. I think that kind of makes sense. But, you know, it's so hard to understand how there are dark sides and underbellies of things that happen on screens. Because we're, as parents, we're pretty good detectives. And I think this is a really good positive, you know, trait that we have as parents, but it's also can give us a kind of a false sense of security when it comes to screens. I mean, I was a very good detective, which is why I was so shocked when I found out Adam was addicted to his video games. I knew where everybody's lost shoe was. I knew where the missing socks were, you know, when people were running out the door to go to school. I knew who was due for the next dentist appointment, even didn't even have to look at my calendar. Like, I was on it. I also knew deep down in my heart how my kids were doing emotionally and physically. And, you know, mom, if I'm talking to you today, you know what I'm talking about. You just know. It's just this sense. We get a sense and we know when things go wrong, which is why I was so completely unraveled and shocked when I found out what was happening to Adam, because I couldn't even believe this was happening in our family. But that's the story for another day. But I remember talking with a detective one time, a police detective, and he told me that when they were in crisis management of a case, like a missing child, for example, they always listen to the mom for cues with these cases. And they said, this gentleman told me, he said, I don't know how, but mom usually has a clue. She usually knows something, and we always follow what she's feeling in her gut. Even if it just seems so bizarre, we still follow it because mom just knows. And I'm not saying that dads don't know either, but moms, you're trained to be pretty good detectives. And like I said, we have a gut sense about our kids, but that doesn't mean that we still don't have blind spots. So today we are going to uncover a blind spot, and you may think that you're good to go and that you, like me, know what's happening in your home, but this blind spot is so strong, and honestly, it is so hard as parents to step out of yourself and turn around and look at yourself and really understand what our blind spots are. They're huge stumbling blocks, though, in that it's Screen Strong. This is what our job is. Part of our job is to help us understand our blind spots. And when it comes to screens, we have lots of blind spots, and they're very stubborn, and it's very hard to get rid of them. And one of the biggest blind spots that we have is that our kids would never do X. And it is so hard, I think, and I think the reason why it's so hard for moms especially is because we're so connected to our kids. And so we just cannot believe that anything bad is really going to happen to them. The other blind spot that we have is that we feel like our kids are immune to the bad things that are happening out there, and that somehow if we just will all this goodwill that they're going to be fine. So First, I will start off by saying, don't ever let a teen shock you and don't ever let a screen shock you. I know back in the day, if I had really investigated, if I had really gotten educated over video games at the time, I would have been a much better parent when it came to managing video games in our house. But I didn't know what I didn't even know. So I wasn't educated and I had huge blind spots. And even to this day, I still struggle with blind spots with all my kids. I think they would never do this because maybe I would never do it. So I think they would never do it. So today we have a wonderful guest who is going to help us erase some blind spots, and she's going to educate us and quite possibly save your family a lot of pain, maybe save a friend. So be sure to put this on your list of podcasts that you're going to share far and wide. So I want to welcome our guest, Liz Miller, to the show. Welcome, Liz.
Thanks, Melanie.
So glad that we were able to get you on today. Can you just explain to our audience just a brief bit about your background?
Sure. So I'm an attorney. I started an organization for fighting domestic sex trafficking here in the U.S. I originally studied international law and human rights and kind of got into this realm via that realm. I saw a lot of things internationally, studying the international criminal courts and the human rights violations all around the world. And then also started seeing things just while I was traveling, human trafficking, and started learning more about the reality of how it works today, mostly on the international side. But then when I ended up staying in the United States rather than staying in Europe to work, I started getting involved in the domestic side, the U.S. side, and started to understand all of the realities regarding human trafficking here and how it's different than international human trafficking. And then really felt recognizing the needs and the gaps in the resources and the ability, like what is needed to fight the crime here and to help victims and to help communities here. There's so much to be done, and just with my own kind of knowledge and expertise, and felt called to start my own organization, and then moved specifically to North Carolina to start it where I'm from originally. So I've been working on that for the last like 5 years.
What is the name of that organization?
So it's International Organization for Stopping Exploitation of Women. It's a mouthful.
Yeah, good. Yeah, no, that's great. So you are pretty entrenched in this topic.
Yes.
It just from my visits with you before, you have such a huge, vast knowledge, and you are talking to an audience today that some people may understand a little bit about it. I certainly did not. So I know there's so many busy families out there that are trying so hard to learn everything, because once we open the world of all this stuff to our kids, we have to all of a sudden become experts, and it's just so hard. So in our short visit today, I'm so excited that you can help us move the needle and understand more about what's happening in our own kids' lives on their screens. So can you first explain just exactly what human trafficking, sex trafficking, explain what that is, just so we're clear?
Sure. And it can be difficult because the name human trafficking often sounds like, you know, it's some type of movement, or just it's difficult just in hearing it, and the name is thrown around. So I won't quote the legal definition, but I'll just talk about the concepts of what it is. But it is specifically a crime. Human trafficking is a crime. What's important in understanding human trafficking is that it's when a third party controls someone outside of their free will in order to use them for labor or to use them in the commercial sex industry.
Wow.
What's essential in this is not, so the word trafficking, people always sometimes think that's movement. Actually, trafficking is more akin to the trafficking of drug trafficking. Mm-hmm. So it's about the commerce side of it, the commercial side of gaining value for selling something. So in human trafficking, what you're selling the product is the person.
Wow.
And the difference between labor is you're selling someone or you're using them for labor, and they are not getting the benefits of that labor, right? It's not an employee-employer relationship, but it's more as like a slave and a slave owner. Mm-hmm. And then the sex trafficking is where a third party controls who would be the trafficker, but also you could say that the buyer is also a trafficking, is selling. It doesn't have to be for money. It could be for value, any type of value. It could be for even living, for housing. It could be for food. It could be for security, for protection, for any of those, anything of value, is sold to another person for some type of sexual favor or sexual act.
So the definition is different, of course, than sextortion, which is fraud. And that is when you're trying to like extort money out of someone.
Right, because there's not a third party involved, right? So there's two people in that. So you have someone, for instance, like, you know, if in sextortion, somebody is able to contact an individual through their phone, for instance, and then starts to a communication where they end up getting something that they can hold over the head of the other person, right? And then they demand funds because of that. It's more like blackmail, but it's just between those individuals. I mean, there could be multiple individuals on the other side,
sure,
but it's not a third party selling you to another, to someone else, right?
So how does this work? Let's just get straight to it. So, and then we've got some other really interesting points you're going to unpack with us today, but let's just say in the States, let's talk about that for now, just for now. And you have a teenager. Let's talk about how this affects families and teenagers and, you know, like how young does this start? Like what are your thoughts? I mean, I know I won't hold you to it, but.
No. This is pretty consistent. I mean, it ranges as young as you can imagine and older and people in their 50s are still being trafficked. But the average age of getting recruited, and the word we use is recruit when we're talking about primarily domestic, but it can be also used in international, but is 12 or 13.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So how does this typically happen? Does it typically happen on social media?
That is the norm now. That is what is consistently seen, but that's honestly not the, well, I've seen a lot of other different ways from a law enforcement perspective. You know, they'll communicate a lot like that the recruitment and all of these things are happening online, because I think that's where they kind of put their focus more, because it's easier to catch through, well, easier, it's still difficult on the online platforms than what's happening in person. Like the white van kind of idea where you're walking down a road and then somebody opens a door and grabs your kid and then drives away isn't really what we're talking about. Now that can happen, and I won't say it won't. And I would say that within the United States, that's very that can be typical in other countries. But within the United States, it's not as typical, but it's becoming a little more common. So what happens typically when you're talking about it's not like abduction in the same way that you normally think about in movies, but it is primarily done through grooming, where usually the individual who is trafficked, or the child or the young person that is trafficked by someone they know. And they've known for, it could be someone who's related, someone who is a friend of a friend, or someone that they met and started dating. That's very typical. It's called the Romeo kind of way of getting recruited in. But there's also, and this is common as well, so for kids that end up running away so that they are on the streets, right, unsafe, they can just be sitting on a park bench and then someone will come up to them. But still there's an element of kind of grooming to kind of get them into the car and to get them to start doing things for that you want them to do, because the traffickers need the victim to be compliant with them, right? Because they're being sold to a third party, and they to that third party, quote unquote, don't often appear to be a slave to a certain extent, or unfree, right? So in order to do that, they have to manipulate them so that they have a certain persona in those encounters. And so the trafficker is very intelligent, and there are specific ways of getting these victims to do what they want them to do and need them to do. And so that takes grooming and manipulation and coercion, even if there is force in the beginning.
Yeah, talk about that a second. How does that grooming, because grooming is a way for traffickers to build trust, right? Isn't that what their whole goal is? They're trying to get them to trust. They're trying to get the kids to trust them. So then the kids will do whatever they tell them to do. And then they get them.
Yeah, I mean, trust is it's an interesting term. I think because it can be. Right.
Maybe it's not trust.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, to a certain extent, that's what happens. It's false trust, you know? I don't usually use that word because it honestly is more like mind control. And I know it's a word that sounds kind of like it's science fiction, but actually it's not. There's a difference between mind control and brainwashing. Those are two different things. But mind control is where you are able to get someone to do exactly what you want without them like fighting back anymore, right? They just do it. And traffickers have consistently used time-tested methods that have been used for generations regarding controlling people's behavior and changing their behavior and almost changing, quote unquote, their identity. And there's a individual who writes a lot about this and has worked with survivors of human trafficking and to develop more of something that he had already written and developed, which is regarding mind control that is used like in cults, for instance, because this individual was, he's a psychologist, and he himself was recruited into a cult, even though he was in one of the top universities and very smart. But it's not about the intelligence of the person. It has to do with the method of how you can control someone. And it's called he created what's known as the BITE method. Or no, he didn't create the method, but he explains it, which is behavior control, information control, thought control, and emotion, control of emotions. So if you control all of those aspects of a person, you can actually turn them into whatever you want them to be.
So how does that practically happen? I have, let's just say, a 14-year-old daughter. She's on social media now. She's on Snapchat and Twitter and all of the, you know, Instagram, and even Discord, I know, is one platform. How does it initially happen? Does someone befriend her and then she starts a relationship? She starts talking with them, and they, of course, are very friendly, right? And teenagers are looking for acceptance. And what are some of these techniques that are used, just in a nutshell? Like, do you have?
Yeah. So it can be the same in kind of like, similar to what could appear to be a romantic relationship done in, you know, in the beginning of like when someone's interested in someone else, or a friendship. There's a lot of affirmation, a lot of praising, just really getting in and asking them to reveal things about themselves. And I don't mean like inappropriate things, but it's like they're good listeners. And so they listen, and then they actually end up using that information later against them. Sure. But to understand their dreams and to hear like, oh, I can't, you know, tell me about yourself. And like, and then we'll, shower them with affirmation and praise and also compliments, and also their own kind of false vulnerability, which is a very good tactic of saying like, oh, this person is, they also need me, and they're, it creates this false sense of equality in the relationship that's really not there. And then if it's in person, but even if it's not in person, because then it can move to being in person during this process, is they'll give them gifts and things like that. And something to be typically aware of is usually, and I'm not saying it's not going to happen, I just haven't really seen it, where the individual who is kind of grooming and creating this bond in this relational emotional connection that becomes a bond is a little older, is older than this individual. So if it's in high school, let's say it's a high schooler, like a 15-year-old, they may, if it's online, so this is a case that I dealt with just recently, the individual they were talking to online through Snapchat was said that they were the same age, mm-hmm. but in reality was not. But you know, the language in the communication right before the child ended up running away to try to be with this individual. And he had sent money to her to allow her to run away to him. So she believed he was her same age, and then ended up, it wasn't true. But at that point, she's already, you know, kind of in love with him, and he'll say reasons of why. I haven't really seen where you're dealing with like a 2 15-year-olds and one's trafficking the other one. Right. But I'm not saying that doesn't happen. But typically, even if the individual who's grooming, because sometimes the traffickers will use what's called a Romeo. So it could be themselves that they're being a Romeo, like they're being that romantic individual in the beginning, or it's they hire someone else. So mm-hmm. it's very typical. And it can be that there's an individual who's trafficking on their own, like a soul pimp, if you want to use that term. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes it's more of a conspiracy, which just means it's actually a crime, which where two or more people agree to commit a crime. And so typically there's more than one person involved in this. And so that Romeo may end up passing off that, you know, victim to the one in control.
They're kind of getting the girl interested or whatever.
Right. It can start off very innocent, but it always, because of the nature of it, will turn sexual. Right. And then they start pushing the child or young person beyond what is their normal boundaries and limits that starts creating shame, oftentimes shame in the child or the person. Mm-hmm. And then that shame also will start to bond them to that individual, or the sexual act or sexual encounters will bond them. So it's very, I have seen it time and time again where those who were ended up becoming trafficked were in love with their first pimp.
I know for parents out there listening, guys, this is like, I just so strange. And it's not strange. Okay. It's reality. So this is part of my blind spot. You have to help me with here a minute, because it just seems like using my adult brain, you know, I'm like, how could a girl think that, right? But they do. And I know they do. And I know in that stage of development, they are looking for all sorts of belonging and affirmation, and they just want so badly to be loved. And it's a trap, and it's all set up just perfectly. And then they get blind spots, right? Because they can't see what's happening.
Yes. Yes.
I think even if you try to tell them, they're going to deny, you know, that
for years
people are not in love. Yeah, so talk about that a second. So that goes on for years. Even
it depends on the specific situation, but if we're looking at a kind of, if a child is being in a more secure environment, so they haven't run away, it may move more quickly if they're on the streets and no one's protecting them, right?
Sure.
But if in order to get the child or young person kind of away from their secure network of people,
family.
It starts off innocent like this, and nothing is a huge red flag to them. Because most children don't recognize how to distinguish between false love and true love, right? Not at those ages or those levels of experience. And then it will eventually turn, you know, violent, but because that's the way that a pimp ends up controlling in the end. And the horrors, I mean, we can talk about that, but the horrors that these individuals go through is beyond imaginable, what is done to them. But in that interim time, so they end up, you know, pushing them, like I said, beyond their boundaries, and then will also start to separate them from their, it could be different things. It could be they entice them to just run up like, hey, come meet me. And then they run away, take them, and they're gone. Right. Or it could be that they start to have them to do. So I'm sorry. So 3 months is kind of the amount
of grooming period.
That's the average, right? Or the typical, where it all seems like it's the best thing in the world, right? Like, this is amazing. Like, I'm in love. Like, this is a dream come true. They'll talk about future plans. And then it starts changing after that, where if especially when they've started, you know, having sex or doing sexual things with each other, the individual will start asking for, like, pushing, like teaching them things or asking for different things that are go beyond what may be in a normal relationship. And then we'll end up asking for a favor, right? Like, hey, you know, I need money for us to be able to like run away together or for our life, or like, I'm really, this thing happened. And if I don't pay this person, like I'm going to fail out of school or whatever. It could be anything. And then they ask them to have sex with someone else for money or as a favor. And then once they do it once, it's like, it never stops. And then it will turn into, there's no more like requesting, right? It's demanding. And the individual will change if the individual who's the Romeo is also the ends up trafficking, staying with them, turn to violence and like other forms of manipulation that the child or the individual is then aware that this isn't good, but they don't know how to get out of it. And then also, it's so horrible what they do is there's so much shaming of like, this is who you are, like name calling and different things that the individual the victim feels like, because they kind of know the things that they're doing, they feel ashamed for, and then they start identifying with it. And then they start saying like, this is what you are, this is what you're made for, you're just a whore, you're just a whatever. And so then the individual doesn't feel like they can get out. And then it will, you know, the typical things with abuse too, like abusive relationships, is there's times of like pleasantry. So they'll still give them gifts or they'll still do things certain times, but then they'll punish them. They'll be like, well, you were bad. And so this is what we're doing. It's very sick, you know, and that sick kind of disordered abusive relationship is really what you're looking at.
So again, I'm going back to practically with parents that are listening now, they've got a 14-year-old daughter. For the, I don't want to say average, but just typically, is it pretty typical for just regular,
right?
Who's the target? Families,
right? I mean, who's the target? I think that's like who is typically at risk for this,
right? Who's at risk?
Yeah, right. This is consistent as what we've been seeing is that like in the United States, it's not. It's not even your economics, not how much money you have. It's not your ethnicity. It's not kind of any of those normal demographics that we think about. Mm-hmm. It actually has to do more with, I don't know if you've heard of ACE, Adverse Childhood Experiences, ACE reports. It's used in medicine a lot now, or some physicians are using it. Almost all of the individuals who have become victims of human trafficking had very high ACE scores. And you can do these tests, but it's where they've experienced some type of childhood trauma that was beyond the norm. It's not like failing a test, but something that, and most of us have had some type of experience like childhood trauma. But the higher you are on these scores, like I said, the more likely you are to be becoming a victim, because the reality is what these traffickers do is they target people who are insecure in a particular ways, right? So it has to do with our own self-image and our own understanding of our own dignity and identity. So I'll give you an example. There was, and this was a few years ago, but there was an interview done by a journalist to a pimp, a trafficker who was in prison. And he went on camera, you know, his face all fuzzed out, but he explained how he did it and how he targeted. So he would go to malls, and this still happens. He would go to malls and, you know, parents will just drop off their kids. They feel like it's safe. There's a security guard, X, Y, and Z, right? And their kids will just walk around with their friends, you know, after school. And these groups of girls would, you know, be walking around, and he would go up to them. He would watch them for a while, and then he would go up to them and he would pay one of them a compliment. And he would say, hey, like, you're so beautiful, or you have great eyes, or whatever, whatever. And if the girl responded, like looked him straight in the eyes and was like, oh, thank you, and then walked away, he was like, nope, I don't want her. But if he went up to another girl and he said the same thing, and she put her head down and was like, no, or it was like really like embarrassed and like couldn't receive the compliment, he's like, you're who I want. Because if you are really lacking in affirmation of your own person, when someone starts showering you with the praise and listening to you in the ways that you need, that your parents haven't listened to me, or I didn't have a a father there who cared about my emotions or my experiences. And especially in those early years when of puberty, where girls and boys, but where the girls are trying to both boys and girls, you know, understand and all these new emotions and hormones and things like that, they want to be seen and understood. And this person sees you, right? If you don't have good relationships in your life where you feel seen specifically by the opposites, for women, by the opposite sex, because of the lack of that masculine in your life, you're dying for it. And you will that's what they often utilize.
That's what they're looking for. And that is so important. What an incredible tip for parents to be reminded of how our kids are craving this. And we forget because we're not kids anymore. So we just don't even think about it, but they are craving this affirmation from their parents and from, like you said, the parent opposite sex. Dads have to tell their daughters that they're beautiful. They have to talk to them. Not every single day, but you have to meet that need. Otherwise they're going to get it met somewhere else. And a lot of girls are online and they're on social media trying to fill that bucket. And when someone comes along and who's strategically filling it very well, how can they not fall for it? You know, it's like gravity.
Well, that's exactly the point too, is that we're dealing with these individuals know what they're doing. They're very smart. Yeah. So they are targeting your children and they're able to manipulate your child. It's like putting these are very intelligent individuals. These are not stupid. And it doesn't matter even the intelligence of your child at all or the young person. Intelligence is not the issue because, like I said, the individual, the psychologist, was recruited in the same with this a different method because it wasn't romantic, but he was at Harvard, right? So it doesn't matter about your child's intelligence, especially if your children are good children, right? I think all children are good, but I mean, children are innocent. So they haven't experienced certain tactics. And so these other individuals, they're just seeing it for face value, right? They don't realize someone could be listening to what I'm saying and then using it in a future conversation that makes me think, oh no, they understand me, but no, it's because of they know how kids my age work, or they know because of this.
They can't even imagine it.
No, 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 no.
And if everybody listening, if you and I and if we can even remember back when we were a teenager, and don't you remember certain things happening and your parents told you, oh no, don't hang out with them or don't do that or don't do that. And you just really knew in the bottom of your heart that your parents were crazy. You know, because you just couldn't imagine that what they were saying was right. I want everybody to kind of remember that right now in this moment.
Most teens think their parents don't get it. They think that they don't get, oh no, that they, it was different back then. They don't understand. This is different. That's how your teen is thinking. They're not going to share but they don't. And oftentimes the parents don't know. They're actually, sometimes the kid is right. The parents don't know how bad it is out there. You know, where they've forgotten, or maybe they were good kids and they didn't, you know, that was like my parents. I don't think you really were in the same kind of high school I was at, you know, what I dealt with, the parties I was at, you know?
Right. But most parents do know that you shouldn't get in a white van, you know, they do know those basic things. I don't know if you remember the YouTube video. I'm sure I can find it again where it's all set up, but the parents are having a talk with the teenagers and they're telling them, you know, don't do this, don't do that. You know, if anyone comes to the door, don't answer it. Never get in a white van, whatever, whatever. And then an hour later, they leave the house and they stage the whole thing. And the kid he opens the door and they get in the van. It's the parents are in there. They're like, what are you doing? I just told you not to do this. That's what we're talking about.
Well, maybe because it's not a white van, it's a black van.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean? If you don't understand, kids are smart, right? I used to teach philosophy to high school kids. And they understand a lot, you know, but we're afraid of, you know, we want to keep our kids as innocent as possible, but if right. we don't communicate and the realities of what's out there and get informed ourselves, we're actually they're going to lose their innocence and potentially their lives in ways that we can't yeah. even imagine because we're trying to quote unquote protect them. Yeah. You don't protect someone by not telling them that, you know, if you're walking on a tight bridge or like something like that, if you step off, you're going to, you know, fall into daggers or something. You know what I mean? Like, you don't say, well, don't look down. Like, just, yes, maybe if they're like a 2-year-old, but, you know, as you get older and the child is walking on their own, you know what I mean? Like, they're doing things on their own. They're out in the world. Like, they got to be aware. They got to know what's out there. And what, okay, how do I discern people? Like, how do I know if this person is authentic and real and truthful? And what are the boundaries? Like, what am I allowed? Like, if an older man starts affirming you, like, it's very, I can pick it out, right? You know, I was at a coffee shop not that long ago, and this girl was at the barista, right? And she was, you know, with how people dress nowadays, like, you know, with half shirts and things like that. So she's wearing that, whatever. And this guy comes up and he starts just like complimenting her, this older man, and then asking her questions about herself. And she's sharing all this information about she wants to be a masseuse and all this different stuff. And then he starts offering, and there was already red flags about the way this guy's behavior, because I'm just very sensitive to it. And then he was like, and, you know, I could, just a disclaimer, I could be totally off, but they were, you know, I could have been wrong on the situation. But he then starts going like, oh, you know, I have this with my wife. We have a studio where if you need some office space to study for your whatever, like this young kid, this older guy offering her space, and she gives him her information so that he can contact her about potential office space. This is a kid working at a coffee shop. Like, you got to teach kids, like, it's not stranger danger, but it's just discernment, you know, like what's real, what's appropriate communication between two strangers or people online. If your kids are online, like what is not okay, you know, and what is like, so that when people start asking for things or doing things, you can be like, nope, that's inappropriate social behavior. So if you're doing that, there's something off with you, because that, as an adult, you should know better than I that that's not appropriate.
Right. Well, and you said, you know, your kids are very intelligent. And I think this is what trips us up, because intelligence does not mean that they're wise, and it doesn't mean that they're mature and able to handle these things. So it's, adolescence is like being an apprentice adult. They're not adults yet. They need guidance. They need guardrails. We talk about this all the time. It's Screen Strong. Sometimes it's just easier. And most of the time it is just easier to just skip and bypass certain things. And one of them is social media. Social media is not designed for kids. The risk is way too high. And when you think about this danger, you may think your kid is immune, but I'm telling you right now that they are not. No child is immune to this. Not that they will all run off with a sex trafficker, but they are not immune to the exposure of, you know, there's probably, I mean, I don't know what the percentage is, but I would imagine if your child is on social media 3 or 4 hours a day, and they're running a couple different accounts, there are predators out there right now that your kid probably has in their group of friends.
I would say absolutely.
Right. And those predators are just waiting and waiting and waiting for the moment when your daughter starts posting something about how she's really mad at her dad because he did XYZ.
Or an inappropriate picture to see how far, you know.
Yeah. And they scoop in and start taking advantage of that. And so this can happen to very good families. I know there's even people listening right now that have had things happen like this, and they were as shocked as the next person about how it happened right under their roof. I want to talk about a few things before we're going to have to start. We're not wrapping up yet, but I want to be sure that we cover a couple things. And one of the things that you mentioned just a second ago was about shame. And I want you to unpack that, because I think a lot of people think shame is bad. We should never, you know, shame is a terrible thing. But I want you to talk about that concept of shame and why it is necessary.
And also, I think, and I don't know if we can, if we're going to touch on this again, but something that's really important, and I just thought of it that I didn't touch on in the prior section that's really, really important, because this happens a lot as well. A lot of times kids or young people are recruited through other, through friends, like through other girls, right? Through who potentially they're not being sold, but they have maybe different parental or ideas of relationships or whatever it could be. It could be the same, but they, so a trafficker will get that person, even if they haven't been trafficked themselves, but so oftentimes they have, to then recruit other kids or other young people. Oh. This is a lot. I just really want to mention and drive that home.
Oh yeah. So what you're saying is there's like the in-between kind of people that are kind of like the conduit between the
That's
new
not a Romeo, world but
coming in and the, wow.
Yeah. So it's a very, it's very common. And it's so, the reason is, and what I've been studying and trying to understand the nature of it. And this is pretty common. I mean, with women in general, but they tend to trust, other women before a man. So, and I've seen this both on the international side, the domestic side, actually at every level, where it could be an older woman or it could be a friend or a young girl that is like, hey, nah, it's good. Like, this is what the and paints a false picture of what type of person that they're going to be dealing with, or what the, like, let's say it is like recruitment through a job. Like, it's not all Romeo. That's a lot of it, you know, but, or through another, through a guy or whatever, they'll paint a false picture and they'll get that individual to be the recruiter for them. And because of the nature of like when, oh, it's like, okay, I mean, I don't know men very well, but I'm looking at like for young people, right? Like I don't know men, but I desire their affirmation. I'm emotionally drawn to them, but you know, I'm still a little guarded. Well, hey, this girl, I trust her. You know, she's a girl. She wouldn't lie to me. She wouldn't manipulate me. She's so kind. You know, she's my friend. Like that happens a lot. So you got to watch, you got to watch for that. Watch for your friends, like who they're hanging out with. And then they're kind of what kind of behavior shifts. And then, I mean, and there's a lot more there and we can potentially talk about, you know, with drugs and things like that. But yeah.
Well, yeah, for sure. This is really interesting because kids this age, of course, you know, their friends are their most important thing in life and they want to have lots of friends. And so if someone's going to befriend them and, so I guess, yeah, you would want to look out for new friends, right? People that haven't known your family for years and years and years. Maybe you have to start to be, you know, not suspicious, but just kind of alerted, you know, on our end as parents. So let's talk about the,
shame,
importance of protecting innocence and like, the issue of shame.
Yeah. I mean, shame is a very difficult topic, you know, and I think that I've heard it said, you know, there's two types of shame, you know, bad shame and good shame. And good shame is where we, you know, feel guilty for something that we've done that is, that helps us to kind of repent or change, like, oh, okay, like that, I don't want to do that again. I'm sorry for doing that. Where that's, you know, quote unquote, it's, I don't really like to call it good shame, like good, but it is part of, it's like pain, you know, like if you don't feel pain, you actually can die very easily because pain alerts us that something is wrong and that I need to not keep touching whatever I'm touching or doing whatever I'm doing, because if I keep doing it, it could kill me. Right. So the shame is like that, you know, good shame, I guess you could say. So bad shame, which is, and what's interesting at work in this kind of, in human trafficking is kind of an element of both, right? So, this children are most people are aware when they've done something. So shame has to do with, I heard a definition of it where it's like an overexposure of something that should have been hidden. And so we feel, we experience this shame because whatever I was like, whatever was exposed was, and it's not just that it should have been hidden, but when it was exposed, it wasn't loved, right? And it wasn't one, I didn't expose it with love for the purpose of good, and it wasn't received, it wasn't received appropriately.
Right.
And I mean, and that's, I mean, that's just kind of my understanding. I'm sure there's other definitions and better ones. Mm-hmm. And so what we're talking about in the sexual realm, when we're talking about sex trafficking, is that that's why these individuals will push the young person to do something that they experience a certain level of shame for doing, right? Because it's something mm-hmm. that's somewhat inappropriate, and they'll slowly push the boundaries more and more and more. And so mm-hmm. that individual feels shameful already, right? By just that. And then that also, they're afraid of, they won't communicate, just like in this case, it's the same as sextortion, right? They won't communicate that to other people because they feel so ashamed, the people that are close to them, by that act. And then they will start, and what the trafficker does is then capitalizes on that and starts saying, like, this is like, one, wow. I'll use this to expose your family, or I'll do these same things to your loved ones, right? They feel ashamed for things, like if once it gets further on, or like all of these experiences that the individual, the victim is experiencing, the trafficker will say, like, look at what you did, you know, like just turn it right around them like the devil does, like, and just attack them for the thing that they just enticed them and begged them to do for them, right? And so this level of like it can bond you to someone, you know, to a certain extent. And there's also, you know, a thing of trauma bonding. So that goes into a lot of what we're talking about here with Stockholm syndrome and why the individual can't leave even later when they have the opportunity. But that's, and that can be, it starts here, you know, it starts in that kind of that you're this other individual was there with you in this shame, right? In this shameful act mm-hmm. that you did, that then, one, he may try, or she may try to expose it to other people. That could be the threat, or just the fact that, okay, like they were with you in that kind of shameful moment. And
yeah, they know your private shame. Yes. And once they know, then they have power over you because yeah. they can wag that around and get you to do whatever they want. And I just want to say here that I love doing this podcast, you know, show. I mean, this is like one of my favorite things, because one thing that always happens is we learn something new, and we've learned a lot of new things today. Don't get me wrong, but this, as you're talking about shame, is so critical. And what the new concept here that I want everybody to hear is that we need to teach our children now, just from the time they're little through middle school, through high school, about what shame is. And shame is there to protect you. I think in our culture, Liz, there's so many wrong opinions about shame, because we don't want our kids to feel shame, right? If you accidentally see a pornography picture, oh, honey, don't feel bad. It's just out there, and don't feel shame. I mean, I can just hear this in my own head, and we don't want our kids to feel bad, but actually we do. I'm sorry. We do. After sitting here listening to you talk about this, we need our kids to understand what shame is, what the purpose is, that it is like pain.
Yes. Yes.
And it's okay to feel pain, but you have to tell your mom and dad, you have to tell us whenever something is happening where you feel shame. So I think this is a wonderful topic to share with your kids as far as what shame is there for, what it means, and what to do when you feel shame. Because if you right. train your kids yes. to be in the habit
yes.
of talking to you at the dinner table, you know, did you feel bad about anything today? Did you feel shame? Did you, you know, talk about that emotion, because it is there to protect them. And I feel like out of all the conversations we have with our kids, this is probably one of the most important ones that we leave out of the discussion.
Yeah. And it's very, it is a difficult topic. You mean, even just like sex itself is difficult oftentimes for parents. And I think it's probably for similar reasons. But mm-hmm. also there is a, so unfortunately, what I've seen with parenting is there has been a generational kind of style of parenting that I think is changing now, But I think that we could say our parents did it, our different generation. My parents are a lot older because, so they would be in like an older generation. It's not, you know, older meaning like a previous generation than most people my age's parents, but is that shaming was actually part of kind of parenting, right? So it's like, oh, shame on you for doing these acts, right?
That, well, I'm not talking about that, but
yeah. No. So, but that's the thing is to flip that. Like the fact is that it's like shame is to be like, how do you get out of it? Like when you're in shame, like, okay, you did something bad. So instead of shaming the person, because that's what the trafficker will do, they'll start shaming you. So your behavior that you've done is that to what's beautiful is that you can walk with your kid in that shame and help them to be free from it, which is what you want, right? You don't want to live in pain. You want to live in freedom from shame, but shame leads that something is wrong, right?
That's
so it's like, but in parenting, instead of being like, what can happen is if, oh, my kid did this, if you have this already kind of parental relationship with your child, that it's a shaming relationship, right? Where you just acknowledge their shame and blame them, you can actually push them more into this. Where if you have the other parenting where it's like, okay, this is shameful behavior, but it's, but we can walk through it and be free from it to where you don't have it anymore. And it's okay. It's beautiful that we have the possibility. And you said it in something that I heard that you, a presentation you gave, which was that if, let's say your kid's been exposed to pornography, it's not over, right? Like you don't throw in the towel. The fact is that there is actually possibility of just because your kid, yes, may have had these experiences and horrible experiences or done things that actually they can grow from it, be free from this shame and become a better person because of it. But that's your choice as a parent to be able to help them to do that and make your kid, help your kid to believe that's possible. Because if they don't believe it's possible, that's why they get stuck in this. That's my point. If they already think that like their way of thinking of once I've failed, I'm messed up.
Right. And it's because we don't talk about it enough. And, you know, and there's always this thing about, well, I don't want to talk to my kid about porn. I don't want to talk to him about this all the time. And I get that. It shouldn't be a daily discussion. I don't think it should be a daily discussion. But I do think staying in tune with them and as a family discussing what it means to feel shame about something. And that is a wonderful red flag that we have as humans. That we can't ignore it. We shouldn't teach them to push it down. We shouldn't teach our kids never to feel shame, but because they're going to, we're all going to, and it's there for a protective factor. And I just love this discussion about that. It opens up so many ways that we can help our kids. And, you know, when my boys were growing up, it wouldn't be every day, but I would, when they came home from school or just in the nooks and crannies of our conversation, whether it was at dinner or just out and about in the car, I would say, hey, did you guys see anything today that bothered you on your screen at school? You know, I'd kind of word it that way. And they would tell me if they did, or they would say, yeah, there was this one thing that was really weird. And like, why were you feeling that way? How did you feel? You know, just to get them to talk about it. Don't shame your kids and don't like pretend like we can't talk about this. So I love this discussion because I think this is a really big key that we have to talk about this emotion of shame. And I think that when the girls are being sex trafficked, I mean, when they're being groomed, I think that there is a certain element even then of shame that can kind of come across their horizon a little bit, but then they dismiss it because, you know, maybe I shouldn't have given this guy this image of me. And so Liz, I think that the takeaway for this particular piece that we're talking about right now is to teach your kids what shame is, teach them that it's a good warning sign. It's like touching the hot stove. It's pain and it's good. And we need to talk about it as a family and we don't need to pretend like it doesn't exist. We need to address it. So our kids can identify it, you know, when they're having online experiences.
Yeah. And I like to say something about that too. And this is, and the parents may not be aware of this because, you know, they're in a generational, you know, different generation and different kind of life experiences mm-hmm. than the kids at the time, is that our culture right now is actually teaching kids that, and teaching us, if you feel shame about something, that's because other people are not accepting you, and that you should keep exposing whatever you feel as being shame. And it's not you, it's others. So that's actually one of the reasons I got rid of Facebook, because I started realizing, like, what am I doing? Why am I and it wasn't like I was putting on bad stuff, mm-hmm. but why am I overexposing myself, right? Like pictures and things like that for anybody mm-hmm. to kind of look at. But it was a slow kind of process that the culture has done of like, oh, this is the norm, but like everybody can see your life. And then it's like, oh, if you have things that, you know, you feel shame about, it's like, just keep exposing it. That's you, like, be you, you know what I mean?
Wow.
So parents need to be aware that that's the lies that the kids are receiving every day in our culture. And mm-hmm. so they're going to fight you with the idea of like, no, like, this is good. Like, this is me. Like, there's nothing wrong with this. But the fact is that the culture is trying to, unfortunately, like, use you, right? Rather than what's best for you.
Yeah.
And so,
well, and if you become desensitized to shame, then you're vulnerable.
Yes. That's key. That's key.
So we don't want our kids to be desensitized to it. We want them to recognize it for exactly what it is. Parents, you need to be the safe haven for them to have these discussions. Parents, you also need to be the first one to bring it up. They are not adults. They cannot parent themselves. They need you to bring this up. They need you to bring up the issue of sex trafficking, even though they will swear you're crazy and that you don't know what you're talking about, but you still need to have the conversation. So there are protective factors that we can do, at just such as these conversations, and to be a loving family and to use parental controls and to use filters and to do all that. But we have to also realize, from what Liz is saying today, that all the protective factors in the world won't necessarily change your teenager's brain, and it won't change their personality, you know, and their shortcomings, right?
And the point too is, just to bring this home, is that there are people targeting your children. Like, this is real.
Right.
Like,
they're running. Yes.
So you're not only, you know, fighting the kid's desire to be part of the culture, you need to protect your children from people trying to use these and are using them. And like you had said, have probably already in some way seen your child or contacted your child if they are online. Mm-hmm. They're trying to go around these to get at your child. Like, that's a real thing, you know?
They're chasing your child.
Yeah.
It's like I always tell people, pornography is chasing your kids. So let's get our kids out of the race. I mean, for now, you know, not forever, but for now. So what are your thoughts, you know, about exposure to social media? And if you had a 14-year-old girl, would you let her on social media?
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, I don't use social media for my own protections, mm-hmm. right? For my own personal, and I'm, you know, I've seen a lot of the world and had a lot of experiences. So I wouldn't, because the way, and this is really something that I think through my work and then through other work that I've done, and I work in also like data privacy and understanding technological world and all of that aspects. And these devices and these social platforms and softwares and all of these things were created for particular purposes, right? And they were created by people for their own intentions, like usually to make money, but it could be other things like experimental or countless reasons. But to expose your children to these type of, not only of who's on the other side, right? Like other people who are using social media, the very platforms, the very devices themselves, what is their purpose, right? And why is this good for my child to be on, right? Is it good for my child to be able to develop their communication abilities through a medium of a device, right? Rather than in mm-hmm. person, and all of the things that happen with, like, this keeps coming up a lot, but like facial communications and on all of these different things of like how much actually is through language. Like when you communicate, most of it is what, like how much the percentage is body language and things like that. So I don't think it's, you know, good for a child to be able to utilize them. And because I don't think it's good for an adult, and it wasn't good for my own, you know, social life. It doesn't matter how many people you're connected with. I wasn't really connected. It's like, it's false. Like, it's like, you know, it's like cheap food. It's like the food that has all those flavorings in it. So it makes it taste like it's healthy for you, or it tastes really good, but it actually is like really horrible for you. You know, instead of just eating the
empty calories,
Of eating the, like, the healthy food and getting used to it. And in the beginning, when you're used to the, like, fast food and crappy food, you don't like the natural food. And actually, but when you start shifting, like, then you start despising, and you can taste the chemicals in this stuff. And like, you love the taste of, I'm not a huge fan of broccoli, but like, of like vegetables, right? Like, I love the flavor of vegetables. I don't need to put tons of stuff on it, because my body, one, I feel it and I experience the good from it, like the fruit of it. I don't feel like crap afterwards, but also it does, it satisfies what's the purpose of food. And the purpose of these communication systems is supposed to, like we talked about communion, like bring us closer together, but it actually is a false unity, and it doesn't actually really bring us what we desire. It's just false in the moment, just like bad food, right? So I just don't think it's healthy.
Right. It's not, for kids. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of dark side to the screen culture, and we're not fear mongering, and we're not just trying to shame everyone out there. We're just saying it is what it is. It's out there. And you only have a very short period of time with your kids under your roof. And it goes by so fast. And I know that's cliche, but it just does. It goes by really fast. And quite personally, I really don't want to trade any of those minutes for this right now. It is not like the risk and the benefits, the risks are so great for teenagers at this season and stage of their life, when their frontal cortex is not fully connected. They are still depending heavily on parents, and parents, whether you think you can track and know and monitor your kids, you can't. They can get around and talk. And there's just no way that a parent can know what's happening on their kids' social media. And that's why at Screen Strong, we just don't recommend it. We just recommend that you skip social media throughout high school. A lot of parents are thinking right now, Liz, well, I have to teach them how to manage the world of social media. Otherwise, they're going to be adults and they're all going to make stupid mistakes and they're not going to know how to do it. And that is a false statement. You know, when your kids get on social media, when they're an adult, when their brain is more developed and they can play the tape forward and understand what's happening, they will be fine. We don't have to teach them about drugs and alcohol by giving them drugs and alcohol either. So that's our position over here. It's not that all technology is bad. Of course, we are not a screen-free organization, but there are certain problematic screens, and you have really helped us today dive a little deeper into this topic of sex trafficking, and know that all of our kids are being exposed to it, especially if they are online, and none of them are immune. And you cannot will your child to be mature. It is a function of time. It takes time, and it takes life experiences. And actually, they're going to be more prepared for the world of social media if they are not on social media while they are teenagers. Then you're going to have a super prepared kid that is going to understand how life works, and they're going to be just fine with it. So do you have any other few points that you want to make before we wrap up? I know that one thing that we talked about earlier before we got on the show was that children cannot be alone, cannot be left alone to protect themselves.
Exactly. And actually, that was kind of the last point I wanted to make. Okay. Is that an individual who, she's a psychologist that works in, and I had heard her at a conference in Miami. But she was actually part of the audience, and she was just helping the parents at this anti-human trafficking event understand, because there's a very small community, right, of people. And they're like, oh, you know, our community's safe because everybody's very aware, you know, of each other and all of those things. And she worked in the schools, and she said the moment that internet and especially devices in people's pockets was brought into our community is no longer safe. Because now we have exposed, like, anybody is able to enter into our community through these devices. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that's the reality. And I mean, I could give you so many, there's so much to talk about in this regard of what I've learned personally mm-hmm. and what I've seen and from ex-law enforcement and people in higher government who talk about how easy it is to take a child and aim it out of, even in the other ways, right? Like even in the ways of like the white van, because of the internet, because our communities aren't what they used to be. But I will say this, and this is something consistent, and I really believe this, is that giving your child a smartphone or any device that is they're able to get online with, that is attached to the internet, is literally like putting them and then leaving them there, like where you're not literally beside them walking through everything that they're doing, is like putting them into an alley in the middle of a very dangerous city and just at night and just leaving them there. Because all of those doors that go into that alley are like everybody who's online has access to your child through the internet, through these doorways. Anybody from anywhere in the world who has any intention can access your child, and you've just left them alone in that alley.
And no matter how much you try to talk to them and explain the dangers, the reality is that they're there. No matter how much you try to prepare them, the reality is the reality and the dangers are there. And I think that our kids, Liz, must be wondering, what the heck are we doing as parents giving them this stuff? I mean, if I were a kid and my mom gave me something that I was being groomed on or that I was being exposed to stuff, how would I feel about my mom? I mean, just a thought. I don't know. I think that's some motivation right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, the thing is, it's like to think like a child. And that's so funny. We forget that our children also, like you said, they do not have the maturity. They don't have the, I have a lot of nieces and nephews. Like when I'm with the younger ones, right, when they're growing, it's like everything is new for them. Remember, everything is new. Like they've never encountered it before. That's actually what's so exciting. It like brings us back to our, to that, to the newness of life, because they're, and so we'll talk to a child like they understand things, but think about their world and what they've experienced from the moment they were born until that moment. And then ask yourself, can they even comprehend what I'm talking about or like what the
that's a good
no,
point.
They know nothing except the home or what they've had, except they, unless they've been online, they still are just putting that information into their world, you know? And so we have to like, one, recognize that with kids, but then also like, they're not gonna, what they experience from the computer is very different than what we understand and recognize in it. And so they may not, they'll be like, why can't I have this fun toy that like gives me this da 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 da, not realizing what, you know, all of those other things.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's how it slips in. And that's how these things happen. And no one ever sets themselves up for this. They're all these types of accidents that we're talking about today. You know, you can't really avoid it. You can't just say, oh, my kid's not going to see or do or respond these ways. So as we wrap up, can you give just, I'm putting you on the spot. Can you give any quick tips for parents? Maybe there's a parent who's putting two and two together right now and realizing that their child is talking to someone who is probably not on the up and up. Like what are some encouragements that you can give to them to get rid of their blind spot? And just let's end just with a few little tips. I think we did cover the biggest tip is to just skip social media, honestly, right now. But anything else that comes to your mind right now?
Sure. And I think you touched on it in the beginning. And this is, and I've seen this, you know, with mothers who have lost their children through this, is that, you know, trust your instincts and trust like, and act quickly. Like don't sit and watch and be like, oh, maybe I'm wrong. Like the risk is too great. The risk is too great. If your child has been, is in some way in a relationship with someone or connected with someone who's a trafficker or the recruiter, you know, at some level, like don't just watch and be like, oh, it's, you know, innocent, like, because the risk is you may lose your child, because once they're gone, you may get them back, but you may not. And also too, once they've experienced the horrors of what happens, once it's crossed that line, to heal from that, they oftentimes can carry that with them for the rest of their lives. So you don't want them to. So one is, so trust your instincts. Two is act quickly. And then three, like be aware of your children's behavior. So whenever something like kind of, if your child is starting, I really don't like when people talk about, oh, like the delinquent child, or, oh, my child is just like acting out. Why are they acting out? Ask yourself why, mm-hmm. and find real reasons, or like seek the real answers of why they're acting out. Why are their behavior changed? Why are they, it could be just emotions and hormones, but if it's extreme behavior changes, that's a sign. Mm-hmm. Or who they're hanging mm-hmm. out with, or, you know, they've never done these type of activities before. They're dressing a completely different, or a lot more makeup. But really extreme shifts are not the normal mm-hmm. maturity, or normal, like, oh, just childhood experiences. No, like, be interested in what your kids are doing.
No, those are really good. Those are really good tips. I'm also going to just add that what we talked about, the importance of affirming your kids, your daughters especially, of their physical looks, I think that's a big takeaway from today. And then also the importance of talking about shame in a positive light, if you would, you know, talk about it as a warning sign for danger ahead, and that it's something that we have to talk about as a family. I think those are other really important things. One thing that we didn't cover, how do boys fit into sex trafficking? We talked a lot about girls. Is it the majority?
Yes, it's 90% is female. So I focus mostly on that but boys can also be definitely trafficked. Yeah, so that's definitely real, and that can happen through, it can happen through coaches. It can happen through, I haven't seen it as much, but it probably because I don't focus on that as much, you know, but I don't know how much of like them being groomed through online is that way, or if it's more like
mm-hmm. and more in person, like with coaches. And I've definitely heard of that more, the grooming.
When we're talking about prevent your child from potentially becoming a target, like what, so they're not one of those individuals who becomes a target for not that they're not a target, but isn't easily manipulated and coerced, is presence, the idea of presence. So not only is it important to affirm your child, like verbally or do things like that, but what they really desire, and what this is a lot of what these kids who end up becoming part of the being trafficked and part of the ring is they want to belong. They're seeking to belong, and they want someone just to be present with them. So there was a girl who I met who was 15, and she was in foster care because she was picked up by the police because she had been spending three, and it was close to that 3 month time stamp with these individuals who were known traffickers, and she didn't know. And so she couldn't go back with her family because it wasn't safe, but that's why she ended up in foster care. And I met her and I was speaking with her, and she was convinced. She said, the cops won't listen to me. They won't listen to me. These people aren't traffickers. They're my friends. Cause they hadn't started selling her yet. And she said, they just hung out with me. Like, they just spent time with me. We just sat, you know, we did these things together. But then she had some type of, she didn't really share, but this romantic relationship with one of them. But the fact is, she felt like she belonged with them, and they were just be together, right? We have to be with our children. They desire more than anything is our presence. And if we are connected in that way with them, you know, and they have presence in their life, they're not going to go seeking that, you know, from other people.
Wow. That is so powerful. I just absolutely get chills when you say that, because I believe in my whole heart that any screen problem that you're having, you solve by spending more time with your kids. Like, there's no treatment center for it. There's no amount of money for it. There's no big secret. You just spend more time with them, and you just reaffirmed all that for even a different reason.
And you are, and what is so important, I wish parents could see this, like, because I think about it with my own parents and my friends. We talk about this with the difference in generations, but is that like your presence is a gift to your child. Like you are a gift. You are a gift, and your presence to them is the greatest gift you can give to your child. There is nothing that they desire more. And you have to believe that for yourself. You have to believe that you yourself, like that just being with your kid is enough. Like you don't have to do all these things for them. You don't have to do any of those. You know, yes, those are important as parents, but the greatest gift you can give to your child is your presence.
Yeah. And the way that we do it the best is by putting our own phone away and closing our laptop lids at 3 o'clock when they come home from school and making them feel important. Thank you so much for sharing today, Liz. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. You have really gotten us to think about a lot of things, and I'm quite sure this podcast will get shared all over and will potentially save lives. Thank you so much for coming.
It was awesome. Thank you, Melanie. Thank you for asking me to join you in this. It's such an important topic. So I'm so happy to be able to share it.
So thank you all for listening today. I know the topic was kind of tough, but it's our job over here to unpack these tough topics and make them easy to talk about so we can help our kids. And your homework is just to keep listening and sharing these podcasts. And like the podcast recently that was just aired from Andrew and Evan, I remember Andrew saying, don't be so worried about overprotecting your kids that you fail to protect them at all. And I think that this is how I want to end this podcast. Please don't worry about your peers criticizing you for being screen strong, because you will be ahead of the game. Your kids will be ahead of the game. And we can't be so worried about overprotecting that we fail to protect at all. This show may be one that you want to listen to again. There was a lot of content and a lot of tips. Again, if you have any questions for Liz, let us know. Just email us at team@screenstrong.org. And if you want more content, we have our Connect Plus that you can join on our website. And we're adding a lot of content there, especially for that group. If you have questions, you can go to screenstrong.org and go into our free forum and ask more questions about this really, really important topic. And this is a topic that you'll want to discuss with your mom friends and your parent friends and get everybody on board. If our kids hear us talking about these things, they are going to be alerted and it will really help. Remember, we've got your back and we are here to help you out. So until next time, stand up for your kids, stand out from the crowd, and stay strong.